Hello and welcome to the World Athletics Podcast. I'm Ben Harlow and today's guest is US marathon runner Sarah Hall. I just want to touch on how you are, because you've had a really crazy year, it's fair to say. Well, everybody has, but particularly in the last few months. How has things been for you?
It's been going well now. It definitely was a crazy year, starting out, you know, with our Olympic trials being the focus and really believing to make my first Olympic team there, but having that race kind of go the opposite that I thought it would, and then thinking that I could use that all that training towards future races, but actually after that the whole world shut down and I wasn't able to race a real race until London Marathon in October. But then to have the race of my life there, and it's been all over the place. But I've learned a lot about myself, and definitely I feel in a better groove now during this part of the year.
It's kind of crazy for a lot of athletes, especially when it comes to the marathon. It's always something that you don't necessarily come to right away. And you particularly, you were doing loads of different events before finding the marathon. Did you have, obviously it's a really scary and daunting event. Were you ever apprehensive about doing it?
I waited quite a while. I think I was like 9 years into my career before I ran my first one. But I actually loved the training for the first marathon that I did. And, you know, I really learned how to train for a marathon in the race from Ryan, my husband. But he made it look really easy. So his very first marathon, he was leading the London Marathon against like the world record holder and Olympic champion and everything. And not everyone has that experience their first one. Mine was the opposite of that. It was kind of a disaster. But even with that, I just had loved the training for it so much, and it had gone well relative to like what I knew, like from Ryan's career, what I had a good grid for like what good marathon training was. So I knew that, like, you know, even though I hadn't knocked it out of the park right away like him, like eventually it was going to be my thing, but it took a little bit longer.
What about running generally? How long did it take for you to find the sport?
Yeah, I found the sport when I was 13. I started in team sports like soccer and basketball, and I knew I had a lot of speed from those sports, but I guess I just never knew about youth cross country or track until seventh grade. That's typically in the U.S. We don't really have like a big club system for younger kids. It's mainly in school when you hit middle school that you're first exposed to it. So that was when I started, and similar to as I was talking about the marathon training, like just had an immediate love for pushing myself, and I would like run to practice in seventh grade, do practice, run home, and like do hill sprints to failure on the way home, and like no one was like telling me to do that stuff. It was just like all coming from in me, and I just realized I had so much fire for improving and pushing myself, and so yeah, that's how I discovered it.
And when did you realize that this is actually a potential career for you?
Yeah, towards the end of college, I went to Stanford University, and I graduated in 2005, and my last few years I started to hear that would be an option, but you know, I wasn't sure I wanted to do it. It wasn't really like my dream for my life. I've always really wanted to do development work in somewhere like East Africa and help people living in extreme poverty, and that's still a passion of mine, something I'm still investing in through our charity, the Hall Steps Foundation. But so at the time I wasn't sure, like to me being a professional athlete seemed like a really selfish career. But I really felt like after praying about it, God showed me like you can do more for these people you want to help through your athletics than you can if you were just to move over there and work there. And so that's what actually just made me decide to run professionally. And I would have never thought here I'd be over 15 years later still loving the sport and loving it more than I ever have. Like this is definitely like way longer than I thought I would be doing this, but enjoying it the most I ever have.
Where does the compulsion to like want to be so charitable, particularly with like helping in East Africa with charity work and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it was just being exposed to poverty outside the U.S. when I was young. So it was going to Mexico every spring break with my youth group, and we'd be working in really impoverished areas. And then my sister went on to be a malaria researcher and be living in different areas in Africa. And so visiting her there, it just really changes you when you see, when, you know, you hear about it, but like actually seeing people living that way and the injustice of it. I think I've always been really justice minded since I was young. Just that's just kind of how I'm wired. And so I think I've always wanted my life to bring justice to those areas.
Okay. And obviously in college was sort of a pivotal turning point for you where you thought, okay, this could be a potential career for me. And it seemed like a really pivotal time in your life because that was when you met Ryan, your now husband.
Stanford was a magical time. Like I loved my experience there. And it, I think Ryan definitely helped me go pro because that was his dream. So he had always dreamed about being an Olympic athlete. And then I knew I was more sure about him than I was sure about running. And, but we ended up just kind of starting on this journey together. And we dated all 4 years of college, got married right after college, all around the same time that we went pro and got engaged around the same time. And it was all kind of this whirlwind, but we started out this career together, and we've always kind of been each other's support people, even till now where he's my coach.
Yeah, I mean, you've been on quite the journey just as a couple generally. I mean, rewinding back to sort of when you were at Stanford, which I remember I went to Stanford College earlier, well, in 2019 for the Prefontaine Classic. They were doing warm-up stuff there, and it was such a beautiful campus and setting to like, even to just visit, let alone be there at college. It must have been an amazing experience.
It was, yeah. Stanford, so my parents went there, so I kind of grew up there, and we'd go to football games on campus and stuff. But I almost didn't go there because they were kind of nonchalant about recruiting me. And but I really just knew deep down that that was like where I was meant to be. That's where I'd found my people. And really the team was really what drew me there too, was just I really learned how to work together with other women, which is something like a lot of times when you're a standout runner in high school, like you're not running with women, like you're running with the boys or running alone. And at Stanford, it was really, we were actually working together all the time and not competing with each other. And I felt like that dynamic was really unique and really special.
Yeah, it's something that in athletics, a lot of people do sort of struggle with how individual it is, because in team sports, you've got like a whole team to rely on. Whereas in athletics, it is kind of a lot more lonely sometimes. I don't know what your perception of it has been.
For sure, yeah. You know, Ryan and I left a team atmosphere back in 2010, so I would have never thought I would be able to still do this sport for 10 years alone, not really as a part of a team. But you know, what's amazing is, like, there's always people that are brought into your journey at different points, no matter where we were living, to kind of, whether it's just sharing easy runs with or pushing you in workouts, like, the running community is so special that I think as much of that as you want, like there's always opportunity for that. And that's been the case, especially here in Flagstaff, which is quite a mecca for distance running.
So why are you in Flagstaff currently? Are you just on a training camp?
No, we live in Flagstaff. So we made the full-time move here 2 years ago. And yeah, Flagstaff is great because, you know, I have four kids. So we were looking at maybe moving somewhere to altitude, and Ryan and I love the mountains. He grew up in a mountain town. But you have to think about kids when you and their school and stuff. And a lot of times mountain towns don't have a lot of things available for kids just because they're small and stuff. But Flagstaff's a great kind of balance of being a community and a city, but also being at high elevation and having what I think is the best running in the world here.
Again, sort of going back again, so sorry to keep harping on about your college lives, but then obviously you and Ryan first got together, and Ryan was really successful really early on in his career. He kind of had an opposite sort of career to you. He kind of jumped to the marathon straight away and was amazing at it and was like one of the best Americans at it ever. What was it like seeing him be so successful so quickly?
Oh, it was an amazing ride for sure. You know, I was really invested in his career, and so I feel like the wins were like wins for me too. Like I wanted him to succeed even more than I wanted it for myself. And you know, he burst out on the scene. The biggest moment was Houston Half Marathon in 2007. So that was a year and a half into our professional career. Although he had made the world team in while just graduating from college a week before. So that was pretty big too. But it was really at Houston that he set the American record that still stands to this day, even in this time of crazy shoes and stuff, which is pretty wild. And then went on to debut in London and run the fastest debut in American history and one of the fastest times ever. And so, yeah, that was so fun. Like, I think just exposing myself to the roads, like, I didn't really know about the roads. You know, this is before, like, social media, before, like, a lot of stuff. And so I was very much in the track, just knowing track. And so just seeing him just killing it at the World Marathon Majors just made it look so much fun. And that's eventually kind of what led me there myself.
And what was it like? I know that he was in Beijing for the Olympic Games. Did you go to Beijing as well?
I did. And he was also in London. And so, yeah, you know, those are special times. And definitely for myself, like, I had my struggles earlier on in professional career. Like, I had bright moments for sure. Like, I made 3 world indoor teams and had some success on the roads and things, but I never quite had the outdoor track success I felt like capable of. So that was, you know, it was hard at times. I felt like I was taking much of more of like a supporting role to Ryan. And sometimes my career was taking a bit of a backseat to that. And I think through that period, we've always just seen our careers like we're a team. And so like, I was kind of taking some of the slack at times, but now he is doing that now. He's in more of a supporting role for me, and that's really allowed me to like flourish in these last few years and stuff. So yeah, it was definitely a fun ride, but it had its challenges too, because like, I think seeing his success, like, I wanted that for myself and was trying as hard as I could, like harder than I ever could to get to that level.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, obviously you've been together now for such a long time, but both of you never really were peaking in your careers at the same time, so you just sort of like a seesaw where you, you know, ebbs and flows in different ways. What's it been like having that switch of Ryan obviously stepping away from professional running and is now coaching you?
Yeah, it's been mostly really good. I think you want your coach to like know you inside and out, right? Ideally, like, so Ryan sees how much I sleep and what I eat, and he knows what makes me tick, because he's kind of been like my sports psychologist all along, like talking me through bad races, or because we've just been each other's support people. So in that way, I feel like him as my coach, it's a huge asset. Like, plus I think Ryan and I are similar, where we're big risk takers when it comes to training. We like to think outside the box. We're not ones to just follow like a formula necessarily. Like, we're always kind of like thinking like, what, how can we do things better, and really aggressive in training. And so, in that way, I think having him as my coach, he allows me to take more risks than probably another coach would let me if I was with someone else. And I think I've really responded well to some of the unique stuff that we do. But there's definitely downside. I think, like, you know, we're not like leaving our issues at home when we go to practice if we're fighting. You know, like, you bring that with you. You're the same people at home as you are in person. And I think, like, we're just not as professional with each other too. Like, I'll snap at him about something, or vice versa, like, where I wouldn't do that like with like a coach that, you know, isn't my husband and stuff. But it can just like kind of escalate quickly when you're out there, so that's not ideal, and that's definitely something we're trying to get better at. But in general, I would say it's really good.
Another thing I wanted to talk to you about as well is you've spoken about how you felt like you wanted to spend a lot of time in East Africa helping people, and you kind of did that in like an ultimate way, where you decided to adopt 4 orphans from Ethiopia. Can you like talk about the background of that and how that came to be?
Yeah, you know, Ryan and I had always wanted to adopt and start our family that way, and we started the process back in, it was around 2013, and we'd been married already like 8 years. And I was kind of just enjoying, or 2014 it might have been, but I was just starting to really enjoy my career. I was starting on the roads and starting to have a lot more success. And so I wasn't quite ready for kids, but Ryan was kind of winding down his career, and he was really feeling that pull. And so we decided to start the process to adopt, and we were thinking we would just adopt like one little girl from Ethiopia, like an infant, because we'd never had kids. And So start from the beginning, start from the baby stage. But really it was spending time over in Ethiopia and seeing in the orphanages, like there's so many older kids there that just the likelihood of them being adopted if they're older than three is like really low. And when we'd spend time with those kids, we'd be like, man, we would adopt like any of these kids. Like they're amazing. And we kind of like that they're retaining a lot of their Ethiopian culture because we love the culture here. Like we already had a connection to the culture with running and from our time training there had really liked everything about Ethiopia. And so yeah, we ended up changing our paperwork and soon heard about our girls who'd been waiting quite a while for a family. And our oldest daughter was pretty close to aging out where you're not able to be adopted after 16. And she was 15 and a half when we adopted her. And so yeah, honestly it was pretty scary. Like it was definitely felt like a moment of like just kind of taking a plunge where you don't know, like everyone we had talked to that had adopted older kids from Ethiopia had like a really, really difficult road of those kids adjusting and like the trauma they've been through and kind of walking that out and having them heal from that. And so we were kind of expecting that. Like we were going into it like this is like the end of the world as we know it. Like I'm probably not gonna be able to compete anymore. But actually it was not that way at all. Like our girls adjusted really beautifully. We spent a lot of time with them in country. Like every other month for a year, we were training in Ethiopia and spending time with them. So we built a lot of trust before, and it felt like our families just blended together really, really well. And that's not to say there hasn't been challenges or it was a huge life shift for sure when you're used to being a professional athlete that's really selfish and your day revolves around like whatever you want to do all day. And to go from that to like the needs of four kids that have never been in school and they don't know English and like adjusting to like a whole different alien planet here, that was definitely a huge adjustment, but really it's been a much easier adjustment than we expected. So yeah.
I mean, obviously, that was quite a few years ago now, though. But I was looking at your Instagram earlier today, just at all the videos and stuff you've got on there, of all of them, they all seem like they have fully adjusted in the best way possible now.
They're all thriving and it's so great to see, like, especially just after all they've been through. And I think they just have such a value for education. Only one in three girls goes to school in Ethiopia. And so they worked really hard to catch up in school since they were so behind. And for my oldest daughter to be a freshman in college on scholarship running, that's crazy. Like I would have never guessed that would be possible when she was completely illiterate and had never run, was kind of not at a healthy weight and stuff from just sitting around in the orphanage. And she just worked so hard, and to see her go after her goals and stuff was really awesome. So yeah, it's been really rewarding. A lot of work, but definitely like to see them all thriving is really rewarding.
Yeah, I noticed as well on your Instagram that a lot of them do seem like they are into running and are really good at it as well. I saw is it Mia who won like the state championships the other day, and what's it like having them love what you do as well?
Yeah, that's really special. Like anytime kids, like you want them to love them. You don't want to push them into running, but at the same time, anytime they naturally love something you love, it's so special, especially with adoption. Like you're kind of building that connection as you go, like with older kids that haven't been with you since you were born, they were born. So yeah, I mean, they definitely have a natural gift for running. And so that's been neat to see our older two really like latch on to that in their own path. Like Mia, our second oldest, kind of took a while to find the sport, but our younger two, they have beautiful strides, but I'm trying to keep them in team sports, kind of how I did early on in my career. And then we'll see if they end up running. But either way, we just want them to be active and healthy for sure. But yeah, we'll see.
And do they watch you when you're racing? Were they watching in London?
They do, yeah. They'll get up at like odd hours when I'm in a different time zone to watch live. And they messed up the days for London, so we watched it all together after the fact. But yeah, their support's been huge. Like they're my biggest kind of cheerleaders, and like they're like, keep going, Mom, like keep competing. And so having that's made it possible for me to keep doing what I'm doing, just having them behind me, and also really getting to like model to them like so many things that I want to instill in them through the sport. Like I get to model that to them in real time and like try to really invite them into the process and share with them the highs and the lows and what it's like to pick yourself up after the biggest disappointment of your career and like put yourself out there again and keep working hard and keep believing and not settling and playing it safe in life. You know, like I get to like show them all that stuff that I hope for their own lives. And so that's added kind of like a layer of meaning to my running. That's been really special.
You just kind of touched on it there briefly, but you mentioned the Olympic trials earlier in the year and how that was like a really big disappointment for you and having to pick yourself back up again. How was it after you realized you had missed qualification? How did you deal with that after the fact?
Yeah, it was hard. You know, the way we select our team is difficult. It's like unlike how any other country does it, especially when you run it on the most extremely hilly course in history. And so I think it's taken me a while to kind of process and just process the disappointment and just also like, I don't know, I just invested a lot in that moment of just believing. I knew that course was going to be like a challenge for me personally, but I had really committed to the training, which was not fun. Like it was really extreme hills and all kinds of stuff. And really committed to it and really believed that like I had what it took. And so to get there and have it not be was like was really humbling. But you know, really I just kind of, I came back to like how much I just love the sport still. And I'm just seeing so much growth from each marathon buildup, and I'm just in loving improving, and I just really love to just train hard. So even when there were no races during COVID, like I wasn't going to hit the couch. Like I like to train hard. And so I just tried to really focus on loving the grind, like falling in love with the work and believing an opportunity would come. And so that's what felt so rewarding for London to come and be able to take advantage of that.
Talk to me about that experience of London and the whole having the quarantine bubble and all the build up and how all of that, what all of that was like really.
Yeah. So I feel so grateful for London. Being willing to put together such an event with excellence, like the London Marathon race committee just like thought of everything. Like it was extremely safe environment. I can't imagine it being any more safe from the moment we left home to the moment we got home. Like, you know, we never stepped foot anywhere outside the hotel grounds besides the race venue. And even at right after that, we were right back to the hotel, and we had like trackers on that would keep us within outside of 6 feet of everyone, that would beep if we got close, and they'd provide contact tracing. And so there were so many details they thought through, which was really amazing. Even like we had our own porta potty at the race, which is like every runner's dream, like have your own little section and like not have to be in line for a porta potty before a race. Like I don't know if anyone's ever gotten that before, but at the same time, like it was challenging. Like I've never just sat around in a hotel for an entire week and only done runs on like a tiny little grass loop like before a race. And so there were a lot of things that just you had to be mentally confident about. And I didn't know what it was like going to be like to run a mile loop for a marathon. Like I'd definitely never done that, and with no spectators and just total quiet out there. Like I think a lot of those were less than ideal, but that's kind of this year, everything's been like not ideal, but it's like about taking advantage of whatever opportunities you have. And so, yeah, I think I just really focused on that.
What was the actual running the marathon like? I know a lot of athletes, they kind of, when they do these big performances, they don't remember an awful lot of it. How much do you remember?
I remember a lot of it. I think like I wasn't really, since I ran almost the entire way by myself, like I think I wasn't caught up in like the competition as much, so much of the race. It was very much like me motivating myself out there. And honestly, like that is not my strength to run alone. And I knew there was a good chance that could happen, just based on like what I felt capable of time wise and what I thought people might do in the race. So I was kind of like, this is like my worst nightmare to be like all alone, total silence, running mile loops. But you know, anytime I started to feel sorry for myself, I just kind of came back to like, this is such a blessing to have a race right now. Like, and I feel so good and like I'm in the best shape of my life and like I get to actually be in a world marathon major, like, and so just that gratitude, like I just that really kept my head in the race, and I just told myself people would start coming back, and eventually they did, and then that really helped me just click into the more of the competitive mindset and chasing. But yeah, I remember a lot of the thought process out there. I remember just how quiet it was, where I was like hearing my own footsteps and wondering if it was someone coming up on me, or it was just the echo of my own footsteps out there. And it was definitely tough conditions too. But yeah, I think all in all, like, just ended up being the most memorable race of my life. So really special.
And what did you take away from it? What did you learn from it? And where is it sort of taking you now for the next year?
Yeah, it's made me really excited to keep just seeing my potential in the event, to see how fast I can go in the marathon, since it was a fast course, but not fast conditions, and just running alone. It made me excited to try to go for a fast time. So that's what's next for me, is I'm training for the marathon project here in my home state of Arizona. That's going to be December 20th, and it's an elite only marathon with similar COVID measures as London. And it's a fast-ish course. I ran 26 miles on it yesterday, so I got a really good feel for it. And it's fast. It's not, I wouldn't say as fast as like London or Berlin or Chicago, but I think it's definitely it runs fast. So I'm excited to just go for it and maybe have some more company than I had in London this time, hopefully.
Obviously, unfortunately, you did miss out on the Olympics. So Tokyo, I don't know whether you thought about going to the track for Tokyo, or whether it's something that you're just like, no, I'm going to stick to the marathons now until maybe Paris rolls around.
Yeah, I do plan to go to the track. So, you know, honestly, the track has not been where my heart has been. I haven't raced on the track in over 4 years. It was the 2016 track trial. That was the last time I raced on the track. But actually, I've made a lot of growth in my strength since then. Obviously in my marathon times you see it, but I've seen it in the shorter events too, and I'm running my half marathons, the second half of them, pretty close to a standard pace for 10K. So I'm hoping once I only have to run one 10K that I can run faster than that. And yeah, so I'm excited to see what I can do on there. You know, it's definitely, my heart's on the roads. My heart is definitely in the marathon, but I want to be an Olympian, and it's one experience I haven't gotten to experience yet. So I'm going to go for it for sure.
That's awesome. That's cool. As well, as an American, you've kind of also got Oregon 2021 or 2022 now to look forward to as a home world championships. Is that something you're looking at?
Oh yeah. I can't wait for that. You know, I was out in Eugene this August to run a half marathon time trial. And while I was there, I got to see the new stadium, and I was just blown away, like, that's, there's a stadium like that here in the U.S. and just made me so excited to compete in there. Hopefully the marathon would finish in there, and hopefully I'll have the opportunity to run some event there. But having a home world championship is huge. So definitely eyeing that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, especially the renovations at Hayward Field, it looks incredible. I know a lot of people were really worried about the track because it means a lot to so many people, but what they've done with it is really, really stunning.
Totally. I have to admit, after competing in the old Hayward Field, there is some sentimental value to that. And I think they did try to like retain some of the historic parts of it and stuff, which I didn't see some of the museum and things because I wasn't able to get inside. But I mean, this is pretty hard to beat what they have now. It's really exciting.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for sitting down and chatting to me. And yeah, well, best of luck as well for hopefully the Olympics next year, and then Oregon 2022 as well.
Thank you so much.
That's the end of this month's episode of the World Athletics Podcast. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're on YouTube. To catch up with more podcast episodes, you can look on our YouTube channel or on your podcast provider. And if you can't get enough of athletics, you can follow us on all platforms at World Athletics. Thank you.